Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 1st work session of the Gustavus City Council. And this is the 20th anniversary of the incorporation of the City of Gustavus. We want to thank and honor those who've served on the original Gustavus Community Association. And the first council members who were Becky King, Hank Lentfer, Lou Cacioppo, Tim Gibson, Martha Romero, Wayne Howell, and Sandy Marchbanks. Also, we want to commend and congratulate our very first city employee, Ben Sadler, who is the original city clerk and treasurer and is the current treasurer. The room that we're sitting in, which I believe was the former library, I don't know if it shows on the screen, but the addition with the bathroom and the other offices and the kitchen were all added on. The original city council building had no plumbing. And the population was estimated about 450. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game estimated in a report at the same time that we had twice as many moose as people. I Googled a few of the events on April 1st, 2004, and found very little, except that Google started up Gmail, and a New Zealand merino sheep was found after hiding out in a cave for 6 years. When they sheared his fleece, the fleece weighed 60 pounds. His name was Shrek. I also thought it was pretty interesting that the highest grossing movie in 2004 was Shrek 2, and the zodiac astrological sign for the month of April is Aries, the ram. I think all of this is very interesting, but only makes sense on April Fool's Day. So I want to wish Gustavus a happy anniversary and happy April Fool's Day to everybody. So as we go into, we usually at this meeting, we'll review the draft meeting agenda for our general meeting next Monday. And we will start with that. All righty. The first item, of course, will be the general meeting minutes. Is there any discussion at this time about the meeting minutes? No comments. And then we will be having staff reports. We won't be presenting them today, but next week we'll have the Volunteer Fire Department quarterly report, the city clerk, the city treasurer, city clerk quarterly report, city treasurer monthly report, city administrator monthly report. And we have two items that were listed on the consent agenda. I've asked Madam Clerk if we could relocate item number 6, which is FY24 XX. It doesn't have a number just yet. Capital project funding 2024 for the landfill expansion. I think that I would like to move that to new business so we could have a discussion on that. So at this time, maybe we will go ahead and entertain a discussion about this. I would point out that the item, and the reason that I'd like to have it discussed is it's $110,000, so I'd like it's a fairly significant amount. It's number 12 in the packet, and also number 35 was the summary of the project disposal and recycling center mound expansion and groundwater monitoring well replacement project. It was approved. The project development form was approved in February at our February 20th meeting. And there is also the project planning attachment B project development form, which was approved. Is the city administrator Kathy Leary online?
I am.
Okay. And Ian, and I guess, Kathy, would you be willing to give us an explanation about funding this in-house and the decision to do that?
Sure. So we went over this and put the an updated larger version scoping document in, which was approved at the last meeting. In looking around, well, two things. In looking around for funding, some of these infrastructure project funding things take a really long time to get through, and we're never certain whether they're going to be approved or not. And because this project has a few things that has to happen one of which is the fence, the other is the ditch relocation. There's several little components within this that we could sort of do certain things at a time for, and because it's approximately $100,000, I feel like it's not worth the granting the time and effort that it would take to maybe get a grant for this. And it's of kind of critical importance that it gets done within the next year and a half. So I'm asking for us to fund this, to self-fund this in our capital projects, because it's an important issue. And I'm hoping that by doing that and getting this piece done, when we do apply for other things, like we've gotten the main building, we've gotten the funding approved. We don't have it secured, but we have it approved. I'm hoping we could use this as a, like when we go after the compost building funding and maybe other funding for there, we can say we've already invested this much in updates to our landfill facility. And so it is really important that it gets done. And, you know, we do have capital funds that could pay for this if the council wishes to approve it. So that's my input.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Ian, would you be interested in giving us maybe a 1 or 2 minute short description of what the project entails?
Yes, I can do that. Essentially, the beginning of the project would start with the relocation of the ditch. And then after that, it would be clearing some trees and doing a little bit of dirt work and then constructing the fence. And that's really all the project entails. I know that's a pretty short description, but that really is all it is relocating the ditch, some dirt work, and a little bit of clearing, and the fence.
Okay, thank you. And it's for the purpose of enlarging the area for additional solid waste accumulation?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you, Ian.
Madam Mayor, if I might just add one more thing. Also having this done prior to the other bigger projects would be really helpful. And having, we also have permitting processes that we've already moved forward with. And so far we've gotten two of those out of three of them out of the way. So we will have the permits in place.
Okay, and how does this project assist in getting the permits in place?
No, we've already gone forward with the permits that we would need to do this project.
Okay, thank you, Kathy.
One from Army Corps, one from Fish and Game that says we don't need a permit from them, but we're still waiting on one thing from Army Corps. We've gotten one from them. We're waiting for another one.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. Okay, Mike.
Yeah, just a quick question. When, before this goes into operation, do we excavate a pit to start putting the bales in, or do they get placed on the existing grade level?
So because we are grandfathered in, originally when our landfill was constructed, we were required to keep a distance of 2 feet from groundwater. And that got grandfathered in, but talking to AD&C, they would recommend placing it at ground height, essentially. So my idea was to just scrape a little bit off the top until I essentially find a good layer to start placing bale fill, so everything matches up at the end, if that makes sense.
It does. Thank you. That's a good explanation.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. And I guess I forgot to make sure that everybody gives their full names before they speak for just for the recording. So I'll ask folks if they can give their names. Okay, any other council questions or comments? Oh, yes, go ahead, Janine.
Yeah, this is Janine. So just can you tell me where the funding comes from? If we do this in-house, where does the money come from?
It would come from the capital long-term funds. If you look at the NCO, the draft NCO that was put forward, you'll see it says city held accounts, capital current, capital project long-term. So we would be moving it out of long-term into capital current, from which we would then be able to move that as we needed to pay bills for that project into the checking account.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay, go ahead.
This is Brian Taylor. Quick question for either Ian or Kathy. Thinking about, I guess, one, I see in our capital improvement plan that this also includes the groundwater monitoring wells. So just want confirmation that this money that we'd be allocating covers that as well, which I believe it does. And then you mentioned, Kathy, how having this done before we proceed with anything along the lines for the main building, which we have received, I guess not secured, but theoretically have funding for now. What are potential, I guess, do we have any potential complications down the line of if this were to not be finished by the time we start with the main building, and what complications do you potentially see there? That's trying to just define that in my mind.
I don't see it not be completed before that, because we likely, it's, first of all, they have to assign the funding to a federal department, and then that federal department has to get all their ducks in a row to be drafting the award and all the stipulations in which that has to be awarded. So it'll be like sort of kind of rewriting a plan and a grant for it. So I don't anticipate that to happen. I don't anticipate we're going to be able to get project ready for that building until next year. Whereas this funding would allow us to complete this project this year. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. And then if I could just get a quick confirmation that this is also covering the groundwater monitoring wells as well. That's just to make sure.
Yes, this does cover the ground monitoring wells, and I forgot to include that in my earlier statement. Ian Barrier here.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, I don't see any council member hands raised. Okay, moving on. The next item is item 7 in the draft agenda, the capital project funding 2024 Salmon River Park Playground Equipment Expansion Project Phase 2. Do I have someone who can give us a brief explanation of what this is about? Kathy or Mike, perhaps? Oh, Ben? Oh.
I would defer to Mike if he'd like to describe it. I mean, I can, but Mike understands what those costs are for as well as I do. And the only thing I have to add is we're hoping for an additional year of funding from the CrossIt folks to cover this, but we don't know, so we want to move forward with it.
Yeah, this is Mike. This will help. What this does is appropriate money to the project so we can proceed to construct it, and then we will backfill that with the grant money when it comes, whatever it comes. But to my way of thinking, in a project, if we're going to spend money on the project, we have to actually, on a capital project, we need to appropriate that money to the project specifically, regardless of whether the source is a grant or it's our internal capital savings. So what this does is appropriates the money to the project, and once it's appropriated, we can proceed to complete the project, and we'll hope for the success with the grant. And if we are successful, we just backfill it. If for some reason we weren't successful, then we'd be spending the money that we've appropriated out of our capital funds for it.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Can you give us a brief description of what the Project Phase Two is all about?
Oh, sure. The second phase is to do a wheelchair accessible pathway, actually a decked, a nicely decked walkway that will run from the edge of the parking lot next to where the ramp comes up to City Hall, and sort of parallel that ramp and then angle over to the backside of the play area, run right along the backside of the play area, and then connect to the trail leading to the restroom. So that will provide for wheelchair access along that route. So somebody in a wheelchair or a walker or whatever can move along there and watch the kids or whatever. And if there is a child in a wheelchair who wants to use the RevaSpinner, which is designed for use with handicapped children, then that would be a route for them to get to the RevaSpinner and enjoy that. I'm not sure that the drawings that we have right now show a widened section for a bench there, but we'll probably have a wider section along the sort of the center there for, so we can have one or two benches for adults to sit on and watch the kids play and that sort of thing. Okay. So those were all things that were recommended by the kids when they first approached us. They saw the need not only for the children who would use the equipment, but for handicapped adults who may come to observe, and they asked for that in the original project. So we thought it was a good idea.
Thank you, Mike. Are there any questions from council members or comments? Yes, yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
I'm just curious. I'm trying to pull up the scoping or the original scoping document for this, because I'm not sure. I don't know if we ever actually outlined the potential costs for the, I guess, the phase two and all that would entail. But do we have any kind of idea of the accounting? I see we're appropriating $8,000 more to the project, but we still have about $20,000 in the project. So do we have an idea of how much of this we're anticipating actually being out as far as the end result on the construction goes?
I mean, how much that we, right now we've got money in the project where we appropriated an original amount for the project, and then we got a grant that covered a big piece of that, mm-hmm. after a $20,000 grant, which meant we had a lot of extra in the project. And to do this second phase, we asked the contractor to give us a proposal to do the walkway, and the proposal totaled up to $8,000 more than we had left over from the project. I think it's $8,000, whatever it is in this NCO. Mm-hmm. So that's the basis for this amount, is the difference between what's left over in the project versus the estimate or the project proposal for the amendment to the project.
Can I add something to that, Brian, if it'll help you?
Please do.
I'm sorry, what?
I said, yes, please do.
Okay. So there was a couple of different ways to proceed with this. One would have been like the Hardin Beach Trail, kind of like down on the beach. The other was to go with a boardwalk with HDPE recycled plastic lumber. And because of the growth of brush and everything in the park and how fast everything grows, You can go outside and look at the little crushed rock path in the back, just getting up the back steps, and there's already stuff growing out of it, you know? So, and because of its versatility, because it can be pressure washed, because it can be shoveled, because it's super strong and it'll last for years and years and years and not rot, we decided to go with that, including buying enough left over to build a couple of picnic tables, because our picnic tables are getting kind of old and waterlogged and soggy out there. So the increased costs are because of the choice we made for the durability and lifetime and less maintenance for that walkway. Plus, it'll hook up to near the bathrooms. So that's why it's higher than was originally anticipated.
That helps a lot. Appreciate that, Kathy.
I don't see any other questions or hands raised. The next item, we'll be moving into new business. Number 8 on the agenda of 14, page 14 in the package. This is a project scoping and development form for the same old road drainage project. And Mike, could you give us a brief description about what this is about?
Sure. This is a project that we've intended to do for a long time. This is Mike Taylor. Project that we've intended to do for a long time. Same old road floods badly whenever we have heavy rains. And particularly the section that runs from the corner, well, along the front of TJ's, Lazar's place, I guess, and down to the corner of end of the trail. That whole section sometimes is totally underwater. And when people drive in it, the road gets badly rutted up, and then there's a lot of maintenance to it. And a lot of times it's just not passable by, unless you got a four-wheel drive pickup truck in that, under those conditions. So we've long intended to do something about the flooding along that, in that hole, or the section from the corner by Chuck Bales and Tim Sundy's place, on north to where it turns then east towards, well, I think we've got it on the map too, if you wanted to show, go down to the map. Okay. You can see, if you start it, you see the red box there. That's what we would improve drainage all the way around that. And the lower left corner connects to a ditch that runs along Glenn Parker's original southern boundary of his homestead, and then goes over to Glenn's ditch. And that's a flowing ditch carrying water that runs along the south side of the old church camp subdivision there. And we also drain water from that corner that's coming down same old road. But the north-south section of same old road there is partially ditched, and some of the driveways have culverts. Most of them don't, and a couple of culverts are undersized. So we would ditch that whole section, both sides of the road, and install culverts along it, under the driveways. And we would also ditch the east-west portion along the top of that box, and at least one side of end of the trail, which runs, as you can see, north-south on the right side of that box. And then we would clear brush and make sure we've got decent flow along the bottom side of that box, so that we've got drainage from that's coming from the end of the trail side has a clear flow down to where it can get into Glenn's ditch. So that should improve the flooding problems on both same old road and end of the trail. And so that's the project. We need to spend some time designing it, decide exactly how many culverts to use, and the source of the culverts. We do have a bunch of culverts in stock, some of which we intended for this project when we bought them 2-3 years ago. And so we could either use those culverts or buy more if we're using those culverts elsewhere. So that, those details we have to develop. And again, this is a scoping document. It doesn't appropriate the money for it. So any, is there any, oh, I think, by the way, there's an inconsistency I noticed in paragraph 6 under where it says, what's the total amount? And it says $40,000, but the table down below adds up to $46,000. So that's something that we should fix before we will make those consistent. We'll change the upper, the paragraph 6 amount to 46,000. That's the estimate. That's on the next to the last page, of page 5 in the project budget table. And these are, you know, a rough estimate. For programming purposes and planning purposes, but in paragraph 6 above that, I had typed only 40,000 and I should have typed 46,000.
Okay. Thank you. And there was also, I think, concern about whether there would be PFAS consequences or in doing that work. Could you address that?
These are existing roads and roadsides, and these are shallow ditches. To me, it doesn't really make a difference.
But we had testing done.
No. Well, there is some testing around, of course, around 77, same old road, because that site was contaminated.
Okay.
But as is, it's an existing drainage pass that right now it just flows down the road. So what we would be doing is pulling shallow ditches. These would be greater pulled ditches. They're not deeply excavated. And the material that you pull out of the ditch, that's all really sandy material. We've actually ditched a lot of the west side of that northwest section or north-south running section of same old road. We ditched back when we were doing flood repairs. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, we would probably just be repulling that ditch, and then we've got a couple of driveways to put culverts under.
Okay. And do we have any council member questions or comments? Okay. All right. I don't see any hands on Zoom. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess better to say something than nothing. I'm curious, and I know that there was some along the lines of the concerns you mentioned, some members of the public expressing around PFAS. I'd be curious to see if there's anything that we have available in any kind of data set that we can use to either quell those concerns or at least do as much due diligence as we can around. I think the concern was that we were going to be moving material that may be contaminated from one place to another. So if there's any kind of testing that's been done, if it adds another, I don't know, $100 or $200 to the project cost to do some kind of testing, I'm not sure if we're not ditching super deep, I don't know if it's possible to get enough water to run a test on because it's going to be drained. So I'm not sure exactly how we would test, but I'd love to find a way to either use something from the existing data set or to, you know, add another $100 or $200 to the project cost to address those concerns and let people rest easy that we're not making the problem worse, if there's a way to do that.
I may be confused, but I thought we had test results.
We do have some test results up around that would be the northwest corner of that, you know, near 77 same old road. And there are some other test results, I think, between there and north of that section, if I recall right. So we do have some sampling. We can take a look at it and see if we need more. What it probably we would do would be sediment or soil sampling, you know, that because normally that there's no water, I mean, except when it's heavy under heavy rain conditions, or maybe, you know, snowmelt conditions, we don't have water flowing down there. It's a dry ditch. So it just would be soil sampling, and we're not going down to water table. The existing samples that are taken in that area, I think, are deeper there in the water table.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just say I'm on the record as supporting additional testing if we need to make sure people feel comfortable with it.
We'll look into it as we develop the project and let you know.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And number 9 on the agenda is approve City of Gustavus Capital Improvement Plan for 2024 and 2028. I wonder if Ben Sadler, the treasurer, could come join us for this.
Ben Sadler, City Treasurer. All I did with the capital improvement plan this year was update the dates, updated some of the wording, added in some new descriptions for some new things that have been added to the plan. I did notice today that I missed, there's four, can't even tell you exactly where at the moment, but there's four places where I, in a row, put question marks and dollar signs rather than the amount. So I apologize for that. I will fix that before next week. And Kathy wanted me to add in to update the main building to show that we are preparing to receive $3 million in funds for that. So I'll try to get that added in too. I don't know if anybody else has had a chance to look it over. After a while, I didn't do anything that we didn't discuss at the meeting that we had. And after a while, it becomes hard to read over and over again. So if there's typos or anything, feel free to email them to me, and I'll try to get those updated as well. But other than that, unless you guys have questions, I don't really have much to say about it.
Hey, Janine. So as I'm looking through this, I'm wondering if it would be possible to add something to that. And what I'm thinking of is the grant for the Lucas chest compression grant that Sol had presented and that we passed a scoping document on. And as I think more about it, the cost of the Lucas chest compression device seems to be a small cost for what it could potentially give to this town in terms of being able to do the CPR. And the more we think about, you know, the CPR, all the information that he presented about the reason to have it seemed very compelling to me. And I'd like to see if we can maybe put that on more of a fast track and either fund it in-house or maybe put it on where he continued to look for the grants for this year. And if he's not successful in the grants, then we decide to fund it or... but instead of having it languish as something that is a good idea, but we don't fund, it's something that I'd like to see if we could bring up higher on the priority list.
I don't think that's a question for me, is it?
I'm not sure of the process. And so it's a question for the council as to how we go by about this. But if I were to, you know, I would like to put that forward as a recommendation that we add that to our list of things that we fund in-house.
Yeah, this is Brian Taylor here. That brings to mind an interesting question for me, because I guess I didn't even think of the Lucas chest compression device when considering capital improvement projects, because in my mind it stands kind of as an equipment thing and not a capital project. But I guess I don't really have a clear definition for where that line lies, because it's not a dollar amount thing, because we've got the ventilation fans for the library. So are we looking at like infrastructure assets versus, I don't know where the definition sits for what is a capital project and what's not, but that, I think that's how I had kind of classified that in my head around the Lucas chest compression device, was that it was more equipment and not a capital project. But yeah, I agree. I'd like to see that as something we do. I'm just not sure if this is the place to quantify that.
Yeah. And this is Shelley. We've actually had this discussion about, and I think are pursuing scoping documents for equipment as well, that may not have had scoping documents before. But I suppose that's a good question about whether we would want to put it into a capital improvement document. Do you have any thoughts, Mike, about that?
It is an item, you know, often capital items are considered to be things that last, I don't know, more than 3 years or 5 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And this one certainly should. It might make sense to add it into the plan. And if we want to buy it soon, then the process is to do an NCO and appropriate the money out of capital funding for the purchase of it. The only problem, you know, and then still apply for the grants, but the only problem might be if we bought it and a grant possibility came in that we may not get the grant because they could say, well, you already bought it. And some grants operate that way. So they won't give you a grant for something you already have. So I don't, you know, maybe Kathy would have a suggestion on that because she's more up on the grant processes than I. But I'd say an NCO would be appropriate if the council wants to buy it soon. We'd have to do an NCO for it. And the NCO could come out of capital funds rather than operating.
Yes, go ahead, Kathy. I guess I'd also be interested in your thoughts about whether it would be appropriate to include small-scale equipment requests in the capital budget or whether we could enlarge the scope of the capital capital improvement plan. I mean, go ahead, Kathy.
I don't feel like it's a capital cost. So I agree with Mike that if we apply for 3 or 4 grants, which there's quite a few out there for equipment like this, we just have to be on top of when they, you know, when the notice comes out and so forth. And, you know, maybe we set a time limit, you know, if we don't have enough funding after a certain amount of time and the council wishes to approve an NCO for the balance, then yes, we could take that out of capital and do an NCO. I don't think at this time it's a big enough item to put in the CIP.
And are you okay with that, Janine?
Sure. I mean, I don't, it's as long as we continue to pursue it and put it, if we, and I like the idea of saying that we would write an NCO, say by the end of next year or the end of the year, if we don't get the funding from a grant. Mm-hmm. And so I'm okay with it as long as we make sure we keep it up on the table and that it does happen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, one other comment, Taylor. We are presumably going to have to fund this out of capital out of the capital savings as a capital item because we don't have room in the forthcoming operating budget to do it in the operating budget. So it's going to have to come out of capital. But whether or not you put it in the capital improvement plan is, I don't know, I guess you could go either way on it.
Mm. Okay. And any other comments or questions? Thank you, Ben. I guess we're I don't know if we need Ben for anything else. Let's see. No, I guess we don't. Thank you. Did you have anything you wanted to say?
Yeah. If I could just speak to the council for a few minutes. We have got the budget pretty close. We're still $18,000 short, I think, at the end of the day. We will find that money. It's not a problem. I was hoping that last year we did our first meeting in the middle of March and our second one at the end of March. And so we've missed those deadlines, which aren't hard and fast, but as time goes on, we need 2 meetings in order to pass the budget. And so I was hoping that if the council would like to pick a day, the third week in April, preferably Monday, just because then it doesn't mess with your schedules. You're already giving up 2 Mondays a month. Maybe we could give up 1 more and we could have our budget meeting with the council and go over where we're at and what everything looks like. Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Monday
And this would be the first round.
Yes. So the, what we would do is we would have the budget meeting with all the council members, try to work out any problems that you might have with it. Last year, the council went along with Mike and I's recommendations. We then followed it up 2 weeks later with a budget town hall, and there were no community objections either. And that was it. And then we were able to move forward. In the past, there have been years where it didn't go so well with the council, and then it didn't go so well with the community, in which case the process gets dragged out. So I would recommend that we have the first one with the council with the intention of having one 2 weeks later with the community, try to get that in before the May work session, so that if possible, we could introduce it at the May meeting and pass it at the June meeting.
Okay. And would we have department heads?
Absolutely.
At which of these meetings or which
at,
one?
At both. I would, okay. That's what I recommended last year was if, you know, it's you're asking for these funds from the okay. community and from the council, you should be here to tell them why you want them.
So the first meeting and then the
both,
yeah. town hall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Madam Mayor.
Yes. Go ahead, Mike.
This is Taylor. Just to confirm, that would be a budget work session.
Right? I'm sorry.
Not a regular meeting.
Yes, I'm sorry, specifically a budget work session.
Okay. So, and the town hall is essentially a work session as well, right?
It is. It's just an opportunity for the community to talk about whatever concerns they might have, or in last year's case, appreciation. So,
okay.
You know, go either way.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
Okay.
Next item is number 10. It is resolution assuring unfettered public access to the Falls Creek land via the Hydro Road. Mike is kind of smiling because he knows I'm going to hand him this one. Hey, Mike, can you tell us about this?
Sure, let me pull it up on my screen.
It's for page 53 in the packet. Oh, yes, go ahead, Kyle.
Did we decide, are we doing that work session on the 15th? Sorry, I didn't want to move on from that if we...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so we're talking about the third week in April for the first work session, followed by a town hall about 2 weeks later, and then the general meeting. Okay, so let's see. We have the 15th for the first work session, the 29th for the town hall.
And then back the next Monday, the 6th for the May work session.
Okay, for the work session. And what is the date of the general meeting also?
General meeting, the 13th.
Okay, the 13th. Okay, so we have the 15th, the 29th of April, and the 6th and the 13th of May.
And those last two are work session, or regular work session in general.
Right, yeah, so, okay.
And what time? Do those go at 6?
6.
I believe there's 6.
Works it because there are work sections. Okay.
I'm sorry. For consistency's sake, what we've done in the past is we have the work session on the Monday. We have the town hall on a Wednesday. So if we could do it the 15th for the Monday and the 24th for the Wednesday.
Okay, 24th.
And that would give us time if something happens between at the town hall for the mm-hmm. council to get back together before the following work session mm-hmm. where we discuss passing the budget.
1 week.
Right. That's fine. Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have been clear. I didn't.
Okay. So the April 15th on Monday, April 24th on a Wednesday.
And
do you have Brian, did you want to address it?
I was just going to, I guess, try and finish your sentence and say, and both of these at 6 p.m.?
Yes.
That works for me.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ben. Yes, Janine?
So I might have a schedule conflict on that Wednesday one, but I'll have to see if I can fix that.
Okay. All righty. Okay, now let's see, we're back to item 10, the Falls Creek Hydro Road Access Resolution. And Mike Taylor.
That was like my mic wasn't on, so I'll start again. Back in late January, we had a Zoom meeting with FERC, AP&T, and the Olneys to discuss the issue on the public access to the hydro road. At that time, AP&T had made, a month before in December, had made an offer to the Olneys to clear up the question of whether the easement, the fact that the original easement did not have the word public in front of the, you know, calling it a public easement, which was the position that the Olneys had, and they had taken the position that it was not a public easement. So AP&T had offered, we've differed with them, of course, as to whether it was a public easement in reality. But AP&T had offered the Olneys a new easement that clearly stated it was a public easement and cleared up the, made it absolutely clear that AP&T was in charge of the road, and which is what the license says, and that the public had the right of unfettered access, at least within the terms of the public access and recreation management plan. There are a few little statements in there about things like hauling rock or moose carcasses out of there. So, but at any rate, they had made that offer to the Olneys, and the Olneys had not accepted it. And to this day, they have not accepted it. They have not, apparently didn't feel it met their expectations. And that offer included a $3,000 payment to them for the change in terms. At any rate, we have been expecting that FERC would would be contacting us. Or they had said at the time that by the end, around the end of February or early March, they would be back in touch with the various parties individually to discuss where they were. And to my knowledge, none of us have heard from them. I don't know if they've talked to the Olneys, but I happened to talk to Jason Custer today. He called me about it and said that they haven't heard anything from FERC. They haven't heard anything from the Olneys since that meeting. And so nothing essentially has happened. And a number of us who are users of the road and care about the public's interest here have been concerned that we're going, we've been through a period of time where usage of the road has probably been pretty low, just due to the difficulties of driving out there in the winter and on Rink Creek Road and so forth. But we're getting to where the public wants, will be wanting to use it more. And we are concerned that we'll get into another use season and with more conflicts and more harassment of people using the road. So the point of this resolution is to firmly state the position of the city of Gustavus stating that unfettered public access to the Falls Creek lands via the hydro road is a public right. And the whereases state the rationale for that, including the history of the intent of public access. You'd have to read them all, and I don't know that you want to go through them all tonight, but it comes down to stating that the setting by resolution, setting the city's policy through this resolution, that the City Council of Gustavus, for the reasons stated in the whereas things above, and in defense of the public interest, declares that the public, including both Gustavus residents and visitors to the community, and the visitors is an important part of this, by the way, have the right of unfettered access to Falls Creek via the hydro road in accordance with the terms of the FERC license order, the road management plan, and the public access and recreation plan as amended. That is the amendment of 2016. And it's further resolved that the Gustavus City Council urges, and this is just as important, by the way, this next one, urges that public travelers on the Hydro Road from Rink Creek Road to the project entry gate to respect the private properties and operations along the road. Users should not stray from the graveled road, should drive responsibly, and avoid disturbances that may impact neighboring properties and occupants. Any excursions outside the road easements without the permission of the private property owners may constitute trespass. Similar respect is also due for the two posted privately owned native allotments beyond the gate on the state of Alaska lands. And then the last paragraph says, and be it further resolved that the Gustavus City Council asks the Alaska Power and Telephone Company as the Hydro Road Operating Authority to remove all non-compliant signage within the Hydro Road easements and return the items to their original owners. Installation of signage informing users of the license requirements for respectful and safe use would be reasonable. So the intent is to make it clear to the public that in our view, public access is an unfettered right that the public has, and that it's not to be infringed within the terms of the license and the road management plan and public access and recreation plan. And that by removing the signs, then the public and visitors who may not know the background on this and show up and want to hike up there, see the sign and think, gee, maybe I can't go there after all. Well, we need to make it clear to the public that they have the right to use the road. But in doing so, they have to use it responsibly, just like they do any other place. Going down any other road, we would not expect people to be wandering off onto your property or something and causing problems. So that's only reasonable, and it's reasonable for the city to enforce that in support of the concerns of the adjacent landowners. So now I don't, in the last paragraph where we ask AP&T to remove the signs, my understanding is that they may feel that they can't remove somebody else's signs that are not, it's not their property. Somebody's put the signs in. They're not sure that they have the right to remove them. We can go ahead and take that position here, but if AP&T doesn't remove the signs or the Olneys don't remove the signs, then we may have to find, you know, either take city action to do that. Actually, the signs at the start of the road are not on the Olney's property anyway. They're on Wayne Clark's property because at that point, the road is entirely on his side of the property line. So we could ask Wayne to either for him to remove them or to authorize the city to remove them on his behalf. There's a third sign up on the tree where they've got their camera up closer to the Homesteader Creek, that at this point, I don't know for sure whether that's on their property or on, you know, which side of the property line that one's on. We'd have to figure that one out. So the point is to put the city's position on record and try to move this forward. It's been dragging on for 2 years. A lot of us think that it should have been solved long ago. And we'd like to see some action on it effectively, particularly before the visitor season. So that's my kind of summary.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, I guess I'd like to add two comments. One is that for people that may not know, the meeting with FERC was arranged as a dispute resolution between AP&T and the Olneys, and we were invited in as interested representing the community, not necessarily one of the parties. And this is access has been going on for 15 years. People have been the first 13 years. We were welcomed in the last two. There's been some obstruction, but this has been a 15-year process. And there's two attachments. One is the new survey, and also the Olneys had said that they were concerned about criminal activity, and we checked with the troopers, and there have been no criminal complaints in the last couple of years on the property. And it looks like Jim Muscoviac has his hand up. Do you want to go ahead, Jim?
Yeah, one thing right away here, I mean, the city is declaring this. I mean, did you run this by the city's attorney? Can we declare anything we want to? Like when a person is declared dead, they're officially dead, but we can declare our belief that, but declaring something is a public easement is, it seems to me like a very strong word. And also we left out the fact that, you know, I spoke with someone at the Department of Transportation. He called me about this. And he said that all that the APC needs to do is invite the public as invitees, which is written into the easement, and everything would be good. But yet the APC has done nothing. So I think that if we're going to declare things, I think we should run this by the city attorney. And again, you know, APC's Jason Custer had said numerous times that they were diligently working on this. That was his word, diligently. Yet it's 2 years and nothing has happened. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Can you explain again what is the issue that you would like to run past the city attorney?
Well, can we declare things? The word declare there, we declare this is, it's too small a print here for me to read it right now. But can we declare things like that? If we can declare anything we want, we could declare a new easement or we want to build something else somewhere else, or I think that's a real strong word there, and it overstates our abilities
and authorities. On which page would you say?
Even it's right in the title.
Okay.
For that matter.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jim.
This is Mike.
In writing this, I was pretty careful not to declare that it is a public easement. I said that we are declaring that unfettered public access to the road is a public right, as we see that under the license and under the history of the project. The declaring that it's a public easement is, would be something that the other side could pick at. So I didn't actually use that exact term. The one thing about it, yes, we could ask the city attorney to review this. We'll be looking at hundreds of dollars of attorney time if we do that. I mean, he will have to look at the easement, and he'll probably try to make an assessment of the easement, and that all takes a lot of time, and it costs us money. I'm not sure that we need to go there. I think we've got a strong case laid out in the whereases that we're setting this as the policy of the city, and the city council of a second class city can do anything that is not contrary to state law or federal law. And there, I suppose there, you know, somebody could claim it is somehow contrary to state law because the state is the platting authority for the unorganized borough. But I don't know that anybody would really want to go there on that. So I would, for that reason, I think we can put it through, but it's not, you know, I can't be absolutely sure that there isn't some sort of pushback we get on the point that you made there.
And this is Shelley. Jim, if we were to change the word declaring to regarding, would you still have concerns about the perhaps the content of the resolution?
I This is Jim. I don't have it right in front of me here, but I'm sure we could come up with some language that wasn't so definitive there, that said, you know, that we believe, or given the situation that is as it's evolved. But it's interesting, because the fellow I talked to with the state, he said this could happen, but the APC needs to say that the public is invited. That's all the change that needs to be done. So to me, that, you know, saying that we declare that it is an easement is not really sound, given what the state has said. And the fact that APC, again, hasn't pursued this is beyond me.
This Mike again. By the way, FERC essentially has said that the public has a right to use this route. That's what they told us in that Zoom meeting that we had with them. So to me, they're saying that the public has that right under the license requirements, and that it's APC's responsibility to assure that the public's right to that is not infringed. And so I think this resolution is based on that. It references FERC's position on it. And in fact, it's the next to the last whereas says, FERC representatives in a video conference meeting with the Olney's AP&T in the city of Gustavus on what was February 2, 2024, confirmed that AP&T must assure unfettered public access to the Rink Creek Road, or from the Rink Creek Road via the Hydro Road, in compliance with license terms, and that AP&T, as the project owner, controls that access to Falls Creek project area. So to me, that's a pretty strong basis for us saying, in our view, the public has that right that FERC has said they have. And whether they, using the invitee term may be one way they could do it. They just need to make a statement, and I would hope that this would encourage them to take that stand and just come out and make the statement that the public has the right to use that road. We invite them to use the road. It's essentially, they have invited the public clearly with their website and their brochure, and the public has clearly for 15 years been invited by AP&T to use the road. So yes, they, however they want to say it, whether they want to say the public is granted the right or is invited to use the road, then that's all great too. And by the way, that this first section of the road is in a public easement already, so that part is clearly undisputable.
Go ahead.
Well, at the meeting with FERC, I assume that it was recorded, so we should be able to maybe take the exact language they use and put it in quotes.
I think the dispute resolution process is supposed to be a confidential proceeding, Jim.
Okay.
Go ahead, Brian.
This is Brian here. I would say at first, I'm happy to see us taking an official position on this, because it's been frustrating and pretty difficult when things have been on a little bit more nebulous. For example, last year when the Gustavus Visitors Association was requested to have the hydro hiking route removed from the visitors map, and that the first round of maps that got printed didn't even have it on there because the city didn't have an official position. And so the president of the GVA said, well, I don't want to ruffle any feathers, and I'm not sure that I want to put this on me. And so I'll just take it off for them. And so I think that it's important for us to have a clear position on this so that people have something to look to. And even further so, to outline exactly why we have that position as we've done so here. So I feel like that's great progress, and I'm happy to see that done. Maybe that means I won't have to explain this legal situation every single time I bring someone hiking up there, which will be nice. And I do agree with what Jim has said, specifically that we could potentially use one of these now, therefore, be it further resolved sections here to put a little bit more pressure on AP&T, potentially in the last one here. that as the Hydro Road Operating Authority to explicitly or to clarify that the public are their invited guests. I think that's something that we could be resolving to ask them to do the thing that they ought to have done 2 years ago and just officially invite people so that this isn't a gray area anymore, because that's exactly how it's listed on the easement in the first place. And so I think we should probably do that. As far as going too far and declaring this, I think in the title of the resolution, I don't see a problem with that because of how it's phrased. We could potentially, in the very first, now therefore be it resolved, change declares to considers, but I'm not terribly concerned about that one way or the other, but if we wanted to soften that, that's something I would support as well.
We can certainly edit those things in to the version that goes into the packet for the general meeting if you want. I don't like the idea myself of being at all wishy-washy about this. That's why I wrote declares. You know, I think we got to be pretty firm about this, but changing it to considers, maybe not, doesn't hurt it that much, but I think we need to be pretty firm on this. And I think that we represent the public here. We are also representing the interests of the visitors from afar who come to our community, the concerns of the National Park Service, where their visitors go up this road. We don't need to shy away from being firm about our protection of the public's interest here. But yeah, we can edit it a little bit if you think. And I do like the idea of putting in something about suggesting the use of that invitee phrasing.
I like that.
You can do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, Janine?
So in the title, if we said a resolution by the City of Gustavus supporting unfettered public access, is that a word that would be acceptable? Oftentimes resolutions, we do resolutions supporting something. And so I don't want to water it down, but I'm just wondering if that's would be a compromise.
What do you think?
This is Brian. I'd be happier to say asserting unfettered public access as a public right. I think that we are making the assertion, and I think we have plenty of evidence for that. I think asserting could be a good word for here, whether or instead of, because I agree. This is something that we have gone over more than enough times, and it's pretty clear at this point from all the legwork that we've done. And I think there's no problem in asserting that in a firm way.
And what do you think about in the first now, therefore, the word declares, keeping it declares or changing it to asserting? Second line.
All right with me.
Yeah, I think given how much we've qualified it, where we say for the reasons above and in the defense of the public interest, I'm happy to keep it declares there, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that statement is plenty qualified.
I would agree with that one too.
So keep it declares?
I would say keep it declares.
Okay.
But then put assert up in the title.
In the title, okay. And that would be Kyle who just spoke up. So, okay, good. It looks like there'll be three changes in the title. Change declaring to asserting that. I think the last now therefore add language to clarify that public are the invitees of APNT.
They may, yeah.
So I think, Brian, you may have said guests, but I don't think I would use the word guest. I think invitees has a stronger.
Yeah,
invited guests.
I think that the phrasing in the easement is grantee or invitee. Right. So in this context, invitee makes more sense. So yeah,
it's an easement.
Mm-hmm. Adding some language urging APNT to explicitly denote the public as invitees would be a good way to settle this.
All right, and go ahead, Janine.
So I'm wondering if any, if there's a, if we can put in any idea that the historical use of it, and that any reasonable person would think that they were totally welcome to be on this trail, because for the last X number of years, there's a map that's up there that shows the trails. There's a brochure that invites you to be there and gives you information. And so to me, it seems so like any reasonable person would hike up there. They would see the sign. They would see that there's information about it. And it would be very confusing to see a sign that says you can't come here when someone in the National Park Service has put up a map, AP&T has it on their website. And so it seems like, you know, any reasonable person who goes there would expect that they should be able to be there, and they shouldn't have to worry that they're going to be harassed by someone giving them alternative information.
Yeah, I support that. This is Brian Taylor. I think we lay that out pretty well. I almost feel like the whereases need to be numbered here so I can direct your attention to the right one. But on the, I think this is the second page, about halfway down, we list in the fourth whereas there all of the things that they provide as amenities, as well as listing it on their website. And then two further down, we mention explicitly, even italicized, open and notorious use occurring for 13 years. So I feel like we cover that concern.
Yeah, in fact, it's stronger language. This is Shelley.
Yeah, this is Mike, by the way, and the open and notorious reference there is italicized partly to make it clear that there is the option of adverse possession taking of this, you know, because you can, I think the state uses a different, well, they use the term open and notorious use can be, if the public's been using a route across somebody's property for up to 7 years or 10 years or some such, openly and notoriously. In other words, they're not hiding that they're going there, and the property owner is known that the public is doing this, then the public gains the right to continue to do that from there on. It becomes essentially a public easement. So this is essentially there as a reminder that we have that approach if needed.
All right, anybody else? Anymore? Okay, we'll move on and make those changes in the document that gets posted. So next item is number 11, Coffee with Council. I wonder if Mike and Brian would like to talk about their event.
Yeah, this is Brian Taylor. So we can talk a little bit about this. I will say we decided to host this at an alternative location or at a different location, because I heard from several community members some concerns about only reaching one audience if we only hosted the event in one place, and then that's not necessarily inclusive. And so decided to give that a shot, although I think that we may have suffered from limited advertising in the short amount of time that we notified the public of this event prior to the event actually happening, because we had one person turn out. We had some really good discussion with the one person that did turn out for about an hour, ranged pretty broadly. I'm not sure if we necessarily need to fill out a Q&A, because this is a person that's, for all I know, may well be tuned in tonight. They tend to be pretty engaged in city affairs. So I think that as a proof of concept, one of my interests in hosting this in a different location was to see if there's enough community interest in this event for people to, I guess, go even slightly out of their way to attend it. And I would say that, you know, limited sample size of one time having tried this, but didn't find that there was a huge turnout for this as its own standalone event. So I think we can learn from this going forward, because I'm not trying to posit that we should stop doing this because of the results that we had this one time, so much as maybe in future implementations of this, consider making this happen at a place where people are going to be already. Like one thing that I had come to mind was potentially trying to run it at the same time as the second Saturday market, like have a booth at the second Saturday market potentially, where you've got a place where people are going to be already. So instead of trying to get people to go out of their way to find us at some completely separate event, trying to catch them where they already are, which is, I think, what our founders, for lack of a better term, did well in their first go of this, is just finding people in the place where they are. So I think as we go forward and try and honor the idea of, you know, reaching different segments of the citizenry by hosting this in different places, we'll want to be thoughtful of still doing it at a time where people are likely to be gathered anyway, because I think that's one of the barriers that we see when we're here in this meeting, is it's, you know, ever so slightly out of people's way. And there's that barrier to action. You know, they've got to remember that the meeting's happening and either come down here into City Hall or hop online to Zoom. So it seems like if we're going to try and have this kind of engagement, yeah, catching people where they are is probably a good strategy, would be one of the learnings from this. As far as trying to think of some of the discussion that we actually did have, because we flip through my notes here, see if I can find it. So, yeah, please do.
This is Kyle.
Yeah, thank you. Kyle Bishop speaking here. I will say that it's a great idea to catch them where they are, but from our event, there were a lot of people that were there deliberately for it. It wasn't that they were just, they happened to be there on that Saturday.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty clear that, I would say, what, better than 50% made a point to go to that. So,
convenient location. This is Rachel Patrick. Just to piggyback on that, I think, like you already pointed out, it was the, we had multiple weeks to advertise. It was a lot of word of mouth. I, you know, everywhere I went, I went up to random people. I was like, hey, did you know we're doing this then? And, you know, we put in a lot of legwork, but we had multiple weeks to do that. So I think if there's more notice and more trying to draw people out of their shells and get them into the place where you're going to be, it's great. But I think, love the idea of having a booth at the second Saturday. It'd be awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Along those lines, one thing that our one
Brian
here, that our one community participant mentioned, was along the lines of rotating places. It's nice when we can do it in a way that also encourages people to support local businesses. So they mentioned specifically the Cottonwood Lodge, which is going to be opening soon as a place where we might consider hosting one of these events. You know, get people out to the Cottonwood Lodge, explore their services, and also, you know, you've got some nice synergy there with people having the intrigue of getting out and seeing that. So giving someone an excuse potentially to go and support a local business. So nice when we can drive business to local things. The second Saturday market would also potentially do that. Trying to think what else. I'm looking through my notes here.
Yeah,
we chatted a little bit about thoughts on a VPSO. And I'm trying to think if I have any notes specifically on that subject here, but don't see anything that I noted from them. We talked about kind of what role the city should play in development, how we can attract tradespeople, what kind of developments the city could potentially participate in to encourage bringing tradespeople or younger working people that might want to provide services to town. Did a little bit of good brainstorming there. They also were very opposed to removing public Zoom attendance under any conditions, and so that for public meetings here, city council. Let's see what else. We talked for a fair while about different ways that we might be able to make meetings less onerous. And actually, this is one that I think you had already mentioned, this, Shelley, was the idea of potentially introducing a short period for public comment in our work sessions. Mm-hmm. And that was something that they mentioned supporting. And then they also specifically mentioned when we have staff members giving reports to try and really respect people's time. When people have gone through the effort to be here or to attend the council meeting, that we would do well to actually limit people to the 5 minutes. And I do agree with that as well.
And so, for the record, I should point out that the clerk has demonstrating her 5 minute sand timer.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll be excited to see that in action. I think that'll force us to be more conscious of the time from the public that we're taking, because it's easy to get thinking, especially when people are just on Zoom and not here in the room, that it's just us listening to these reports. So yeah, I would say those are probably the highlights. We could write out a couple more of these notes and just to include subjects of discussion.
Can you tell us a little more about the VPSO discussion?
I would say it must have been a rather unremarkable discussion because I didn't even note anything. Nothing made it from my pen to paper. So unless you remember anything about it, Mike.
Yeah, I think it mostly was related to the airport thing. And we just kind of acknowledged the history of it. The commenter was around, of course, when we addressed all of this in the past. And so I think it was just an acknowledgement of the history of it, and that the community was, when polled on it via an actual election, that elected not to pursue it at the time. And so we were just kind of acknowledging that the split nature of the community on it. And but I think we all saw a somewhat of a move in the direction of expecting that we may have to go to a VPSO or some other police powers at some point in the future. But that was kind of, it was, you know, like you said, was not something we discussed in any great length.
Yeah, I think we discussed it briefly as kind of something that some community members view as an eventuality, but not something we're necessarily there at. I think what they said was, why don't we just fly someone over from Juneau on the Alaska Airlines flight every day, which is what it sounds like we're looking to do. So, like I said, this person is pretty tuned into what's happening in our public meetings. So yeah, it almost seemed like they were been reading the minutes or something a couple times.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any comments, questions? Don't see any hands up. So that, let's see, brings us to bike path SS4A grant number 12. Jim Mack, I think you were going to address this issue.
Yeah, I mean, there's another opportunity. The last time we were denied is we got ahead of ourselves. And, you know, we had Agnew Beck, the consultants, looking over our shoulder when we submitted that. But we submitted what they determined was an implementation plan. But what we need first is a citywide safety plan. So there's another application period, and I've begun working on a citywide safety plan application. And I looked at communities that had received grants, and both Haines and Whittier, which were kind of like Gustavus or similar in some respects, had received plans. And I contacted them, and they were very kind, and they sent me their narrative describing what they would do and why they wanted a plan. And so I've plagiarized that a little bit and made it our own language and written a narrative. And I'm starting to fill out the forms, and I'll present those to the council, and we can go from there.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Any comments or questions? Okay. Now we have the city beautification update from Janine.
All right, beautification, which means flowers. And so I've contacted the Glacier Gardens, and I talked to a woman, and she gave me a quote for baskets to be $52.95, which was less than what I thought they were going to be. But I said to have them be large baskets and asked for 12 of them, and gave her and then also some flowers to fill in the box by the Salmon River Park. The library has said that the boxes there don't need flowers, that they'll take care of that, and that they're going to have the kids do starts, et cetera. So what I did was I talked with her, and she's already, as Mike had said, their baskets are already growing. And she said some of them are like ready to almost to bloom. And so they will be ready for us to get them sometime in May, depending upon the weather, depending upon what the temperatures are. And so I gave her a budget of $900, since we had a budget of $1,000, and said we'll get those baskets. And then there's a packing fee as well. And then there's the extra from, will go towards those, the packs for the flower starters for the boxes at Salmon River Park. And then I figured the extra $100 would go towards buying soil amendments throughout, like some fertilizer throughout the year. And then we have these baskets that we've already got from the prior years. So I talked with Jen and at Stellar Botanical about the potential of seeing if people would want to donate flowers that they started, if she could provide the potting soil to go in those baskets. And that's what I was reserving some of that money for, was to be able to purchase potting soil. And then if someone said, hey, I've got flowers I can put in a basket, we could just add it to the mix and we would have more flower baskets to fill in some of the gaps or make it even more beautified. And so I've talked with some various people as far as who's going to maintain them, because of course that's always the big issue. And so Ben said he would be able to do the watering the ones at City Hall. I talked with Debbie Hemingway and she said she'd be able to monitor the boxes at the Salmon River Park. And Anne said that she could help there as well. Hopefully we'll get Sol or some of the people from the EMT to be watching the flowers at the fire hall, or else Anne and Debbie can do that one as well. I talked with Leah and she was saying that the GVA could potentially help with the ones near the airport and by the kiosk at the by the dock. And there I specifically, when ordered two of the baskets to have flowers that would be able to withstand some wind. And so she said that they did have some baskets that were had flowers that would be able to withstand wind. And so I figured that would be good for that windy spot by the kiosk. And the librarian said they could do the ones at the library. And Annie said that she and the chess volunteers could do the ones at the community chest. And so I think so far it's looking pretty good. And Chuck, as we had said, said he would fly them over. So that's a really very, very appreciated. So when it gets a little bit closer to the date, I'll be probably contacting these people who have said they volunteered, and then maybe meet with them and make a more legitimate, you know, this is the nuts and bolts plan. But it sounds like it's going to be working.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, just a historical note. Gustavus's City Hall is located where the school was, and the roses that are growing around City Hall, I'm pretty sure, were planted by Ruth Mattson, who was the school teacher there in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. Thank you very much, Janine. We'll have the mayor's report next Monday. I just want to thank Janine for all of her work on beautification, and also for tonight, Janine and Liesl and Sandy Schroth for their activities. Also Kim Ney for the Willow Roses or Willow Stars. And Liesl, did you have your hand? Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can I just comment on yours?
Yes, go ahead, Jenny.
So just to follow through on what you said, we do have a poster here now in City Hall. And if you didn't have a chance to come by to see it today, stop by City Hall at some point. And what you'll see is a poster that has the names of all of the city council members for the last 20 years. And if you sat and count them, you will see there are 50, which is pretty amazing. We've had 50 volunteer council members, and it's marked as to who was mayor, who was vice mayor. And then you'll see that there are the city accomplishments written there. And I got them not based on basically looking through any historical records, but instead by emailing and talking with the past mayors and asked them what they thought were the accomplishments of the city. And they are what is on this poster. And one of the things that I think is really important to point out is that almost every single one of them said, this happened on my watch, but it couldn't have been done without people before me. And so it was just a really nice way to connect with people and hear of the connectedness that we have from this community. And then the goal, of course, of going towards the future of continuing to be as accomplished as we've been in the past.
Okay, thank you. And I guess we should also thank Tracy, is it Lowell, for the strawberry, wonderfully decorated strawberry cupcakes. So Liesl, City Clerk, you had mentioned we'll have another item on the agenda. This is the item will be to approve receiving funding for cybersecurity assessment and approve work to be performed by the Structured Communication System. This was our cybersecurity grant that we received. We're kind of looking into whether we need to both approve seeking a grant as well as approve accepting the money when we've been awarded the grant. So maybe we can simplify this in the future, but this will be an item that'll be on Monday's agenda.
Mayor?
Yes, go ahead, Kathy.
We don't have to, we didn't have to approve the grant because it was under $15,000, but just like Councilman Taylor was doing with the playground equipment, a pathway, we want to make sure, because the $10,000 procurement policy says it's supposed to have council approval, and because the grant's $12,000, we want to make sure we just accept the funding and approve the procurement for the vendor that was chosen to do for rural Alaskan towns, and that was negotiated at the state level. So we just want to accept that. We accept the funding and we approve the contract because it's more than $10,000. But yes, we should simplify that in the future.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Go ahead, Mike.
So we're paying for this out of the operating budget. Presumably we need an NCO to...
No, we're not paying for it out of the operating budget. We have a grant agreement with State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. But the vendor is a specific contract through which we would pay them, and then we would get the money reimbursed.
Yeah, I understand that. But it's still essentially an operating budget item. And so we should actually have, do an amendment to our current budget to show income from the grant and expense to the project, in my view. We don't just write checks with the knowledge that we have a grant coming in to cover them. That doesn't show up in the, in the financial records the right way, I don't think.
Well, we'll have to have a conversation about that. I will find out from the state how that's working. It's similar to the FEMA reimbursement process, as far as I know.
And this is Shelley. As I understand, where the approval process comes in is when, not just accepting the grant funding, but when we are selecting the vendor, the contractor to perform.
The expense is over $10,000, so the expense needs to be approved, even though we're getting funding for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By the way, in the case of the FEMA reimbursements, we charged the work that was done was charged against appropriated road maintenance funding. So we were using funds that were appropriated for road maintenance already. So there's a little bit of a difference there, but the issue that Kathy raised is really one that I think we need to clarify how we handle this sort of thing. Do we, can we just write checks on the side knowing that there's a grant and we put the grant money in the checking account and we write checks against it? Or do we show that income as income into either our capital project or our operating budget, and then we show expenses against that budget? And I tend to think that the latter way is more transparent. It makes it better. We're dealing with public money here, and the fact that we're getting it on a grant isn't really that different from the fact that we're getting money from taxes. And in our operating budget, we estimate that we're going to get so much money in taxes, and we also estimate what our expenses are on the expense side, and we appropriate money to those expenses accordingly. So to me, the fact that it's coming in as a grant isn't really different from that. But I think it's something that we need some, I mean, I'm not a I'm not a treasury expert by any means, and I think that's something that we could use some consulting assistance from maybe a city that's, you know, bigger than we are and has more experience with it. What is the really the right way to do this? We've been inconsistent in the past.
Okay. Janine?
Yes, this is Janine. And so listening to you talk about that, it reminds me of when last budget go around, we put the library grant into the budget for the same type of thing. And I think it was the same reasoning, so that we put it in and then we know we have it as this income, and then we're documenting that we've spent it. And so it seems to be consistent for consistency that I hear what you're saying, that that would make sense.
Same idea. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, this is Brian Taylor. If I can jump to the actual scope of the work that they're looking at doing, I just want to note specifically, Kathy, if you have an opportunity in your work or discussion with these folks from, what was it, structured communication systems, was it structured, they refer to themselves as structured here. If you in your interactions with these folks have an opportunity to get, I guess it looks like in the report, they'll give us an assessment of our current security failings. And one of the things that I think we could stand to do better is to have some kind of cybersecurity risk training, maybe best practices that are documented as far as council onboarding materials. And so if we have any opportunity as part of this process to get any kind of template or points for concern or considerations that we can use to grow that kind of material, I'd be really interested. I guess I'll shorten my spiel and say I'll be really interested to see this report when we have it. So please be sure to share it with me.
Okay. Well, if you want me to ask for something specific that you just mentioned, maybe shoot me an email on it so I'll remember.
Yeah, will do.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Are we done for the day, Madam Clerk?
The other item had been the possible extension of the ATS contract. That was the other item that she had sent out for adding on to the Monday's agenda.
Okay. Kathy, could you explain that?
Yeah, I'm so because of the, well, not only because of the cybersecurity grant, but the cybersecurity grant and the cybersecurity process, the way it was written was partly, as I mentioned before, there was 3 out of 4 of the communities all use Alaska Technical Solutions as their intermediary for their services, their managed IT services, because they don't have staff to do that, just like we don't. And so one of our ordinance says, if we have a contract, so this, the contract we currently have with them went out to bid in 2021, and we're allowed to have 2 extensions by ordinance. I have asked for a legal opinion on if the council can vote to waive that for another year, or if we absolutely would have to go through the procurement process again. If we have to go through the procurement process again, there is a provision under exceptions for technical contracts or emergency contracting. I'm hoping we can have the authority to have the council waive and allow a third year extension to the contract, because we don't want to have to be re-procuring for services midstream of this cybersecurity assessment. So, and basically last time 2 people bid on it, and the other group was from Rhode Island and bid as much almost per month as these guys bid for the year. So it's doubtful we'd get any other competitive bids on this, but I'm just hoping that the council can vote to extend it one more year, even though it's in ordinance that after 2 years we have to procure again. If we have to procure again, we can go to the emergency or exception rule of having to put it out to bid. But I'm hoping we don't have to go there.
And
hopefully I'll know more by meeting next Monday what the opinion is on that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? If not, I think that we can adjourn. It's about 7:45. See you all next Monday. Thank you.